18th, 1994, taking place in my studio at 500 North 3rd Street, Mebane, North Carolina, and I'm Bill Bamberger conducting the interview. Okay, Annette, why don't you begin by telling me where you were born and in what year?
Okay, I was born in Mebane, North Carolina, right here in Mebane, at, I believe it was Mebane Clinic at the time, in 1951. Which it was two of us. I had a twin brother. Andy and Annette.
What was your brother's name?
Andy. And Sandy Arthur.
Andy was your twin?
Mm-hmm.
And Sandy Arthur?
No, Andy. Andy Arthur.
Andy Arthur. Arthur. Just one brother.
Yeah, just that one brother. Mm-hmm. Andy and Annette. Twins.
And is Andy still?
No, he got killed in a car accident. I guess we just turned 20. 1920, got killed in a car accident.
Mm-hmm. What year was that, in the 70s?
I don't remember what year it was. I think it was 72. It sure was.
Well, I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah, I was too. I wonder a lot of times how it had been if he'd grow, you know, if he could, you know, if both of us made it up to get to, what, 43 years old, mm-hmm. which I am today. I wonder how it had been that my twin brother would have lived.
Mm-hmm. Were you close?
Well, you know, kids growing up, we wasn't close, but I wanted to be close to him, but that's a boy. He didn't want to be close. My brother didn't want to be close. At the time, we had a hard, you know, it's not like it is now. Kids growing up, see, like back then, we chopped gardens. We got out of school for summer, we chopped gardens. We took care of pigs. Mm-hmm. We did all this. This was us. This year in time, they don't do it. They don't have to.
Did you live on a farm growing up?
No, stayed right there at home.
Right there on Fouse Lane?
Right there on Fouse Road.
Same home place that you're in now?
Same home place. You wouldn't believe it. Used to be gardens, pig pens. Mm-hmm. All this used to be there. In fact, my daddy used to rent some land from up the road from this man. That was a big garden spot. Raised corn, tomatoes, all this being the whole nine yards. We used to work in it, taking care of it, keeping it weeded. Then we used to have a horse and wagon. We used to hook the horse up. Go up there and, like, fall, cut the corn down and shock it up in shocks. This was part of our job. What I did was at work. The kids done it. You got up and work.
Tell me your father's name.
Arthur.
So was he Andy Arthur as well, or just Arthur? Mm-hmm.
Well, he was Arthur Edwards.
Arthur Edwards.
Mm-hmm.
And your mother?
Was Zoni Gale.
And what was her maiden name?
Emerson.
And tell me a little more about them.
Well, as much as I can tell you about my mother. Mm-hmm. Well, my mother was from Chatham County. You know, I meet my uncles. I got one uncle living there from Chatham. It was Gaither Emerson. That's the only one you know I really got to know. Didn't know too much about Chatham, my mother's people, because we very seldom got to go down and visit.
Are either of your parents still alive?
No, both my parents dead. Deceased.
When did you lose them?
Oh, now it's been... My father, he was right at 70 when my father passed, if I ain't mistaken. And then my mother, about 5-6 years ago now. Mm-hmm. I think it was something like that.
You talked a little bit about your father's garden and whatnot. What kind of work did he do for a living?
Well, it was logging, puckwood logging.
Logging.
Yeah. He used to work for Sykes's Logging Company.
Was that any relationship to White Furniture?
No.
Are they still
In
business?
I think so. I think they still, her sons, Mr. Everett and Miss Allen is still living, and they still got the company going. The sons got it going. Still got the logging company going, if I'm not mistaken.
And where is it located?
Well, it's out Mebane Oaks, so you got to go down there and turn out to you. I can show you, because I don't know the roads, you know how to get there, but I know where it is.
Tell me a little bit, let's talk a little bit more about you now for just a bit.
Okay.
I'd like to know, when you started your work at White Furniture, what brought you to White Furniture?
Well, I've been trying to get at White's for a long time, and this friend of mine, this girlfriend, said, well, I'm at the hiring at White's. I was working at Graham. And I said, okay, because I've been trying to get there. She said they were hiring. So I walked down to White's and filled an application. hopefully went through my drug street and everything, got a job. So I was there for about 2 years, 6 months? Before the closing started on me.
So you were there 2 years and 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
So you came to work in 19...
What?
1990, something like that?
Yeah, was it 90, 91?
91, maybe.
Somewhere, yeah. Sure did.
Tell me about that. I mean, tell me about your interview, what you can remember, and sort of how you were hired.
Okay. Jim Mirror. That's the blunt-headed man, right? Okay, when I first went and filled out the application, they said, well, you know, we do need somebody in the rough mill. That's where I was. So we already got one girl back in, so maybe you can, you know, inspire her to stay. So he took me back and showed me the job. He walked me around and showed me the job, which I went through, and I seen a lot of people that I knew, you know. He showed me the job, and then they sent me for my drug screening. So I paid drug screening, so, you know, they hired me, told me when to come to work.
That simple.
Yep. Mostly. Just getting in there, I guess.
Did you interview with anyone else other than Jim Murray?
No. Just him, I think it was. Just him.
Did you have friends at the time working there who were references for you or helped you get in to get
Well, just that one girl, and me and her weren't that close. Because she has told me, you know, we'd be talking on the weekend. She said, well, when they start hiring, then I will let you know. And she did.
Who was that?
Wait a minute. Let me try to think of her name. See, we call her Cabbage. Okay, we call her Cabbage. You probably, you know, she was in and out there and ended up getting fired before the plant closed down.
You said she had left before the plant closed?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. She was out a whole bunch of stuff. You know, they determinate her. Mm-hmm. But I believe it's Kathy. Was it Kathy Stokes? Kathy. It was a name. But see, I never learned her real name. All I always know her as Kathy, you know, as Cabbage. So she the one that, you know, told me it was her, and I went in for fill out application for the interview.
Did you ever have any family members who worked at the factory over the years?
Oh, yes, but let's see. Not really, because I don't think my father never worked in there. People that I know worked in there. But, you know, not exactly family members that I can, which they probably were, but I didn't know them at the time.
Okay. Tell me a little bit more about your job in the rough mill. What exactly you did there?
Okay. That was a job. I tailor ripsaw. Now, ripsaw, which, you know, this is something you know, cut the certain length of wood to make furniture. I tailor ripsaw. And mostly worked on the panel flow, worked on the edger, worked on the planer, just whatever, or just anything. I have laid, loaded the line with lumber. Just anything the men done, I done mostly. Worked in the molding department. All this was back in the rough mill.
What was the panel? You mentioned the panel flow. What was that?
That was the, panel flow. It's where you glue the wood together and send it through that slow where Tony used to work at. Mm-hmm. You know, you had to glue it, put glue on both sides, and then kind of send it through. It goes through one end, come out on the other, where the heat went to it, and it made it stick together. The certain man saw coming from it, get out the other end. All it was one great big sheet of wood. When it got out the other end, a saw would come and press a little button, release. It'd come through and cut it a certain length. So it's really just gluing wood together.
Yeah, and that's what... Some of us call it the glue machine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there was two, machines. Yeah. Two or three of them, all of them had different names.
Mm-hmm. Of all those different jobs in the rough mill that you did, you talked about several, which did you like the most?
Telling the ripsaw. Why? I don't know, it's just that, you know, you had to use your wits, your speed, and keep your eyes, you know, you had to be ready at all times. And this is a job I was hired for, and this is what I first started out to do. But, you know, I loved it.
Okay. Tell me exactly. Now, I saw you do it, and I know what it was about to some extent.
Yeah.
But for purposes of the interview, tell me as best you can exactly what you did when you were working the ripsaw.
Okay. Telling the ripsaw. Okay, what I was doing was grading wood. You know, you're just cutting it a certain length, and you have to make sure, you know, if it's good wood or bad wood, wormholes, splits, or whatever. Rough wood, not rough, you know. You had a certain grade that you had so many trucks sitting around that you would grade this wood by. Mm-hmm. Something wasn't no good, you throw it up over your head, let it go down into the hall, but something was some good. You had what, first grade, second grade, third grade, and that's what I was doing. I was really grading the wood as they, you know, cut it.
I know what the hog is, and you know what the hog is. Yeah. Tell the world what the hog is.
Okay. The hog is where you throw away wood that's no good. It goes up on a belt, goes over, goes into a grinder that chips it up, makes it out of chips, which is bad wood. A lot of people would know what it was. Very noisy machine. That's basically, if I know it, I know it as, you know, just a...
Would grind it up, and would you use that wood? Would be used to heat the plant, wouldn't it? Eventually,
do what, it would, what would that? I guess I don't know. You know what? Next time I seen that wood, it was sawdust. Mm-hmm. You know, I find sawdust. This way it'd be next time I seen it. But I know where it was going in and how it was going through the saw. Mm-hmm. But you know, when it grind it up,
sawdust.
Yep.
My recollection was that folks said that it went up and went into those huge dust collecting towers.
Right, right.
And then they actually burned it to feed the furnace actually.
But you know what? They also use some of that going on a truck to make chip coal. Hmm. You know what chip coal is?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they take it and somehow plaster it all together, mash it in a mold and make furniture with it. And some of it was being used as chip coal, if I ain't mistaken.
That makes sense. Was the chip coal made at the plant or was it made elsewhere?
No, it wasn't made there. I don't know where they take it, you know, get it made is. But I have been out. I used to have a friend that drives a truck from Maven Lumber Company that would take these chips to this place. And they dump them off. I watched. They dump them off in this great big old thing. You know, they was actually buying this to make chip coal with. See, when we got chip coal in over there, it was already plastered together with just great big sheets. Some of them sometimes be, you know, 12 foot long, so many inches wide when we got it. They usually take and shape it out to make a piece for the furniture, top for a table, the bottom for a chair.
Okay, let's go back to the ripsaw.
We
diverted a little bit when you told me about sort of sorting and grading the wood.
Uh-huh.
But let's get back to after you graded the wood.
I thought grade the wood, we had a certain bill on the wood. Okay, because we had a bill on everything we cut, we had a bill on it. Mm-hmm. If they needed so many pieces of it, you make sure they had enough to for the bill. And this is supposed to be A1 wood, which we take and put a bill on it, put a tag on it, let them know what it was, push it over to a certain spot. That's when it go to the panel flow to be glued together. Mm-hmm. Which, like I said, come out the other end, they cut it a certain length, certain wide, you know, length. Because mm-hmm. It's already cut. When it come down to us, it was cut to a certain length. But with, you know, wideness, then we had to cut it down. Especially chipping the edges of it to get the rough wood off the edges of the wood. You know, my grading, that's telling the ripsaw, I had to make sure there were no wormholes, mm-hmm. Rough wood, busted places in it. If you've seen all this, just grading the wood. And then it would turn around and put it on a truck, get enough of the bill, then it goes to the panel floor where they would glue it together.
When you were tending the ripsaw, how much wood would you go through in a day?
Oh,
let's do it. Or let's go through in an hour. Let's make it easy.
In an hour. You know, that was hard to say. Sometimes I had so much wood on that table, we have really went through some wood. But we usually average, let's go by day, because we kept up with our footage on what we run. You know, me and this guy running the ripsaw, and me telling them what we would cut a day. They cut us so much on our table a day. It'd like to be about 12, 15 feet a day. This is in 8 hours.
Okay, 12, 15 feet a day.
Yeah, I think that was what it was.
Yeah, that doesn't mean much to me. You have to help me a little more.
Wait a minute. Let me see. Let me make sure I gave you the right amount. Was it more than that? Yeah, it was footage. It was just how much lumber was cut through your saw that day. That's why, you know, they know how much you had done that day. Mm-hmm. So that's what it was.
But what does, in terms of volume, in terms of the wood piled high on the furniture trucks,
trucks.
You would rip it and you would pile it on the trucks,
right.
Is that correct?
Right.
Now, how many of those furniture trucks would you fill?
In a day or an hour?
In an hour.
Okay. But that still is going back to how big your bill was for that order, right? Mm-hmm. So some trucks, some bills would call you for, in order grading it and getting out good grades, I have two or three trucks. But in an hour's time, I would fill up one truck and a half, of this is good wood. Mm-hmm. See, I also had bad wood was coming through too that I had to keep up with. So sometimes I have, what, four or five trucks sitting around me, mm-hmm. which is good grade, A grade, B grade, C grade, or whatever. And you, then you had the stuff that they was going, was really, you just try to make something out of. Sometimes I have three or four trucks sitting around me at a time. Other times I have had six trucks.
So you had to make a lot of decisions right there.
Yeah, right there.
As the wood was coming down the line.
And you really didn't have time to stop and think about what to do with the wood. Mm-hmm. In other words, when this wood come down to you, you had to know what you want to do with it then. Because mm-hmm. it was coming right after one, right after another. So I had to know where. In other words, I had to look this way. Okay, when we first started running it, he'd edge the wood. He'd run it down one side, and I was supposed to look at that wood then, first time. And when I shoved it back up table, he was going to edge the other side. So I'm supposed to know what side is bad wood. I'm supposed to call on to where it was bad at, what side was bad and what side was not, where it was going to go to. First from the start, when he first run it, first through that the first time. And so when he'd run it so many times, he'd run it twice. And if it was a bad place on it, I should have known. I know where it goes, what truck it should go on when it come back down to. Sure did.
Now, who taught you how to evaluate wood? How to tell what was good and what was not good?
Well, I guess my ripsaw runner, the guy running the ripsaw, you know, because I didn't have, when they put you in there, they don't give you no training, right? They take you and put you on here, so you learn this, and this is what you're looking for. And nobody stayed with you. So really, you learn. They might have run it a little slower when you first started to learn, but you know, as gradually, you gradually picked up your speed. To where you know what was good and what was bad.
Now, what happens when you make mistakes?
Well,
and
I know
and you really did.
A lot of them was made. I wasn't the only one. Once you made a mistake, you like to say, you got a, 12, 15 inch stack of wood on this truck. And when they go through to put in the final flow, if they see something bad, they would throw it out. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Or either they go look through your truck and see bad pieces of wood, and you can mark it where you need to get them out. Or wherever who's running the plant floor would take them out, they see marks on them, and, you know, orange markings, they know it was a bad piece of wood.
Mm-hmm. So there was a check before it went into the panel floor.
Yeah, right.
Did you ever have instances where someone might miss it at the ripsaw, someone might miss it mm-hmm. at the panel floor,
and it was going around the line?
And what would happen then?
Well, it's just if people done like they're supposed to, which they got almost a lot about this, somebody was supposed to caught it before it went. See, we have had wood that makes it, it had been molded and made it all the way upstairs and got made into furniture before anybody caught it. And that was a mistake. Everybody got to go home. Everybody paid for one person's mistake. Like they said, it wasn't supposed to get that far. Because everybody, the system they had, everybody's supposed to check behind everybody else. Because nobody's perfect.
Right.
So everybody's supposed to check behind everybody else.
And what happened when this occurred?
Oh, the whole plant went home.
Really?
Everybody, yeah. I mean, if we was working steady back there in the rough mill, and they found a mistake upstairs, and they let it get that far to get on the line, they shut everything down. Everybody went. It cut everybody's hours because everybody went.
So you'd go home without pay, and that was your...
Without pay.
And that was basically a kind of punishment for
that
messing up?
That was it. That was it. For one person missing what another, you know, what somebody had. That was our punishment. Sure was.
Now, how would folks... Did they know whose fault it was, and was anyone ever blamed in it?
Well, different ones trying to blame different ones, but how can you... Because everybody going to make a mistake. Mm-hmm. And then maybe you got to molding. Somebody seen it and said, oh, it'll be all right. And let it go on through. So everybody pay for that mistake.
Now, I've heard some stories from some of the old timers. In the old days, the quality really, really mattered, and they didn't let anything go through like that. Mm-hmm. But when the Hickory Company came in when they were bought out, there was a lot of pressure to keep production moving at a much higher pace, and they let some of these mistakes go on through. In fact, they encouraged them by upping production speed and forcing people to work at a really fast pace.
Yeah.
How would you react to that?
You know what? All this was before my time. You know, they was building quality. That's why. That's one reason I wanted to get in Weiss, because I had always heard it was a good place to work in. You know, it was a nice place to work. They had good benefits and all this. I said, well, I can get in here, you know. Didn't know I was going to get in 2 years or 6 months is going to close on me. But they did. They did try to push stuff at a pace to where you really did. You can put quality. How you going to put quantity and quality together? So you can't do that. And this, I believe this was our problem. You know, a lot of time we got sent home because they were trying to put quality and quantity all in one.
Okay, let's go back to the rip saw machine.
Okay.
If you need to take a break at any time.
Okay, I'm all right.
Tea or anything like that, let me know. We'll take a break about midway through and fix ourselves some tea or coffee or something if you want that. And any time you want to stop the tape,
okay,
you just let me know. You were talking about the wood coming down the conveyor to you.
Yeah.
How fast would it come to you, and what would happen if you get behind? I mean, would it... How would you deal with that? I'm trying to get a sense of how fast the pace was and whether or not you had any control over the pace that you had to work there.
Are you talking about coming through the rip saw? Because, like I said, it's coming through the saw straight down. Mm-hmm. Well, see, they want you to work at a speed. In fact, they walk through and they pile your table up with wood, right? And then they'd come through and look and see how much wood you had got on the table at a certain time. And the way, if you saw runner was running the wood so fast that you was really trying to keep up, all you could do is step back and let it hit the floor. Mm-hmm. And when you got a chance, you picked it up. But I have did that. Mm-hmm. Because you can't catch your piece of wood. Either you're going to get hurt. Mm-hmm. The way they be running the wood, you're going to get hurt if you didn't watch out. So you have to take safety in there with that too. This wood running down this line through this saw, and once the conveyor started coming, it didn't stop. You know, it's going to come out the other end. Mm-hmm. You just had to be careful. Excuse me. Just got a hayful. Cold.
I'm going to stop the tape and get a little water or something. Okay, we're back on. When you tended the rip saw, you worked with a partner.
Right.
Tell me about that.
Well, see, when I first started working there, they had me with a guy, you know. Like I said, I was the only one, well, it was two females in there from the start. And once I got enough, about a month, the lady was already there when I come, quit. So they left me by myself. They had me working with this guy. I want to call him a sexualist. What you call a guy when he want to make plays on you? Mm-hmm. Me and him had a little conflict, because he wanted to, you know, play, and I said, I don't do that. So we got into a little, in other words, we got our stuff together, because I just told him straight up, I don't play like that. That's not me. And so that made, he really tried to show out on me. I thought I was going to go to personnel with it, which I didn't. You know, he straightened it out himself. I talked to the assistant or supervisor. I said, told him what was going on. I said, well, you asked him, you know, to stop, you know, trying to fur play and stuff, because I'm not like that. And they talked to him, and that straightened him out right there. But it wasn't too much longer after the end that he ended up quitting or getting fired. So they put me working with another guy, which we had a good relationship, you know, it worked. Sometimes I get to run the saw and he get to tell it. They had me actually running the saw and telling. Sometimes I get to run the saw. But I guess I had to get in there and put my feet down. Be one of the guys, and that's what I did.
And they start you off tailing the saw?
Right.
But running the saw was a job that had a little more status, or was it a hard
job? Yeah, I think it wasn't as hard as tailing. Tailing the saw was really a hard job. It really was. And running, you know, you had to set the saw up to a certain length and stuff, which, you know, I learned to do all this. You know, they gave me a chance to learn, and I did. Trying to learn everything I could about the place.
Tell me a little more about how you learned these things. I mean, who acted? Did the supervisor work with you, or did you have...
No, just coworkers. Mm-hmm. You believe it? The supervisor really didn't. He didn't stand over you and work with you. ever who you was working with, that's how you learn. That's how you learned your job. Then, like I said, I got to know Leon, who, what's his name? Work on the panel flow.
Leon Ruffin?
Yeah, Leon and Melo.
Melo.
Yeah. You see, they taught me a lot. They taught me a lot. Manuel. They taught me a lot.
And who else, were they your closest friends there?
Yeah, yeah. I used to go back and talk to him, which, you know, me and Tony was close to once she got there. But Leon Ruffins, Kirk Gork was the one I worked with. He run the show, you know, I'd tell it for him. Was Terry, what was Terry's last name?
Villanis.
Yeah, Terry Villan. You know, working on the show like that. You know, most of them just taught me, you know, Melvin, Chris. You know, they taught me, you know, things that I need to know, you know, working back there and what to do, how to do it. There was always somebody there.
So, were you the first woman? Now, I knew Tony was there, but were you there before Tony?
Uh-uh. No, see, there was another lady there before I came. When I came, when they hired me, it was another lady back in there. Mm-hmm. And she was there before I was. In fact, when he took and showed me the job, he said, we got one lady back here, so maybe you can encourage her to stay. Because I think they was having problems with her from the start. So when I went in, she wasn't there much longer after I went in. She left. She got fired or quit or whatever. Yeah.
Now, other than this one person who was obviously flirting with you or whatever, that's putting it mildly.
Yeah.
How are you treated by your other co-workers there, being the only woman or one of two women working in the rough mill? What was that like?
Well, they really accepted me. Because, I was brought up with a lot of brothers. And see, I was a hard worker. And see, like I said, Leon Ruffins knows my family. Melvin Chris knows a lot about my family. And see, my family, my brothers always been in Puckwood. You know, used to cut Puckwood and Logs. So that took, when you got a girl like that, my dad, see, I was kind of a tomboy. So I'm here to do the job that you do. And they accepted when they didn't expect me to stay. I found out later, they didn't expect me to stay there as long as I did. Because they didn't think I was going to be able to make it.
Who's that?
Was it Kirk Worth? The guy was telling you was flirting with me? Mm-hmm. They thought they actually could run me away.
But you mean some of your coworkers thought they were going
to
run you off?
Yeah, they could run me off by putting work on me that they was doing. They tried to run me off.
Why do you think they tried to do that?
I don't know. I guess because I was a woman and they didn't think I could handle it. Mm-hmm. That's the way I felt about it. Mm-hmm. But see, I had to get in there and show them I'm just as... Really? Because I work. Like I said, I was brought up to do hard work all my life. That was me. I was brought up to work hard. A lot of kids never did have to work for their money. My mom, dad put us out there. Don't steal, make your money. We always have, since we little bitty something, have been taught to work for what we want. That's what we know. That's why I was raised up. No job is never too hard. Really, if you really know, if you really want to work, you can do it. And that's the attitude I go in. I go into anything with, because I can do it.
And did you have that attitude when you started?
Yeah, I was going to stay. Because, see, I got the impression, I already felt like it was the way the coworkers, some of them was treating me and doing, that I know they was trying to run me off. They wanted me to quit, that I was going to quit and couldn't handle it.
But that didn't make you doubt that you could do it?
No. In fact, you see, a lot of people don't know. That's why I rode my bike to work. See, a lot of them was going right by my door, right by the road I stayed on, and wouldn't give me a ride to work. They wouldn't let me ride with them. You know, and I said, well, I'm going to get there.
And they knew you didn't have a car, and they wouldn't give you a ride.
Right. They wouldn't let me ride with them. You know, I have had them even go out the side door and stuff, get somebody punched them out and go out the side door to stop from giving me, because they know that I was going to ask for a ride home. I have walked home until I got my bike, and then I started riding my bike.
Even on the coldest winter days?
Oh, I have got wet. Cold. Wet. I have got soaking wet and had to stop at a friend's house in apartments and change clothes to finish coming to work. So I could come to work. Sure did. Got wet coming to work one morning. But just the idea was, I said they was, you know, you know what I was thinking? I said, well, maybe they married and their wives don't trust me riding with them. I thought maybe that's what it was, you know. But you just accept everything.
Just a little bit more with this. What other things did they do to make life tough on you?
Well, I just can't imagine. Nothing really. Mm-hmm. Nothing really as I can think of. You know, besides, you know, trying to run the store real fast, you know, to get me behind.
No, there were, we talked a little bit about the folks that made things rough on you. Who were the ones who came to your defense? Who were the ones who looked out for you?
Oh,
or were there? Maybe I should re-ask it. Were there folks who looked out
but
for
see,
you?
But see, Robert, you know, the supervisor, you know, I could go to him, you know, which I didn't like to bring things, you know, to him. Because mm-hmm. I like to just solve things myself. So I'd go to Melvin, Leon, Terry, and I especially Terry Blind. See, I could talk to him, and him and Stacy with this guy's name that I told you was mm-hmm. trying to do the fur plan. This was they was closed, and he would go and talk to him. You remember Keith Howard? I could talk to him, and they somebody actually called him to the side and told him that this one day that we got into a real disagreement right before lunchtime. That I said, look, I said, I don't want to go to personnel, take him to personnel. But I said, if I have to, I will. But say, I'm not going to put up with it. And somebody called him to the side and told him, you know, that I would go to personnel of what he was doing.
What was that about?
It was the idea, you know, we could wear shorts back then. He would take his ruler and go trying to raise my short leg up, wanting to touch and stuff. And I don't believe in that, see. Mm-hmm. Like, that's not me. I don't go like that. And he just gonna do it anyway. And I actually got loud and just faced him. I said, look, I said, I don't play it and I appreciate it if you leave me alone. Oh, he gonna get upset. I was just trying to kill time. This is what he said back to me. I was just trying to kill time. But if you want it like that, you can have it like that. Yeah. Yes, sir. We went through it. So after this was lunchtime, so I said, oh, well, you know, I'm finna catch it now when I go back to work. You know, he's really gonna try to make it hard on me by, you know, shooting the wood through that real fast. He's really gonna try to make it hard on me. But evidently, when we went back, somebody had talked to him, because I could tell by the way he was running the wood. He looked at me, but he wouldn't have nothing to say. And he wasn't trying to dog the saw out, because he knew I was right. You know, I think the lady before, you know, before I come, she, you know, let them pit-pat and play and do. I think that's what the deal was. And they wanted to see if I was like that. And I had to straighten him out. But I was thinking, I believe that's what the deal was. She let him, you know, pit and pat and play and do. Because he acted like, when we first got there, he acted like he was actually jealous. You know, because I would try to talk to her. He acted like he was jealous because I tried, you know, trying to hold a conversation with her or something. So I believe that's what it were. I believe, you know, she was letting him have his way or whatever. And he wanted to see if I was like that. But that's what all the harassment was about on the job. Nobody never knew that. We never did take the personnel. But I just told him, I said, I really don't want to take it to personnel.
But you said at one point he came back and it was clear someone had talked to him.
Yeah, right after lunch, right after this had happened.
You think it was one of your coworkers?
Yeah.
You think it was a personnel mm-hmm. person?
No, this was a coworker. See, we never let it go to the personnel. Right.
So it wasn't a management, it was
somebody. It was somebody on the floor.
Who do you think that was?
I don't know.
I never
know who talked to him. Mm-hmm. See, I talked to two or three of them before lunch and told them what was going on. And somebody, from the time we went to lunch and come back, you know, he had a whole entire different attitude about it. It was somebody on the floor. It was somebody back to where we was.
Was there a point where you really felt like you turned the corner, where you were really, truly accepted?
Yeah, I did. Because, you know, I get in there and do most as they did, you know. You know, you had the long line was on that last saw up towards the hog. You know, that's the way stuff was about 25 feet long or whatever. And I would lift it right along with them. And I was up there lifting it and doing right along with them. Just like the conveyor belt got stopped up. I'd get over there and stop it with everybody else. But I think they finally seen that, hey, she gonna stay. See, we had break room. Somebody had told me, so we didn't think you were going to stay. So we didn't think you were going to be to hang with us. Because I was back there in the rough mood. Even though I guess because I was a woman and they just said, well, she ain't going to be able to hang. I was like, but I made a comment. You don't know me very well. Mm-hmm. But see, if you know me and my family, if you know my family, anything about my family, you know, people used to have a saying about us. They said, they call us the Faust girls. See, I was a Faust before I got married and said, they can throw a log and turn a hog. Mm-hmm. Ain't that a saying to have about somebody? But they used to say that they made up that for
by battle. Turn a log and turn a hog.
Right? Mm-hmm. That's because my daddy used to kill hogs. Mm-hmm. You know, dress hogs out. Mm-hmm. You know, he actually made a business out of this. Sometimes we'd be right there with him. Be right there with my daddy.
How do you think he would have felt about you working at White Furniture?
Oh, see, like I said, I believe I had family already there. He would have. He probably talked about it, whatever, but did it when. My daddy was something. Mm-hmm. He's probably, you know, he accepted it.
Were the jobs you did the same as the jobs? Now, I know you did the same jobs as the men did. Uh-huh. We'll talk about that a little bit. But were you given the chance to do the same jobs right up front, or were you given a different job when you first went there? Only certain,
we're
given only certain jobs, and
sort of
had to earn the right to do other jobs.
And yeah, well, see, that's the way it was. See, I had to learn the right. You know, I had to earn the right. You know, to, like I said, run. You say let me do it, but you know, I had to be there a while to learn. You know, get the opportunity to do them. And by the time I got ready to leave, they had gave me a lot of. There's a lot of jobs they actually would let me do. The supervisor would come and get me and let me run the planer. So when that you run this out for me, you know, you got to plane it down so many inches. Yeah, before I left there, they asked start coming getting me to do jobs that they would have usually got a man to do. Mm-hmm. He got something he wanted to do. He'd get me to help him.
Well, you told me what your favorite job was, which was working the stairs.
Okay.
What was your least favorite?
What was that one? You know, I guess it was laying wood up. You know, okay. Before the wood even get cut, it has to be laid up on the front. It come out smaller than the yard. You got to, and you take it and lay it over on the belt so it could go down, you know, so they could cut it. I guess that was the only one. But then I guess there was no jobs back there that I didn't mind doing. I do all of them. I do anything, you know. I didn't mind.
How long a day did you work at White Furniture?
How long?
Yeah,
7 hours? No, usually 8. Usually 8 hours. And I'm the one that wanted some overtime and never could get it. I'd be the one wanting to work on Saturdays, and very seldom I got to work overtime.
Why is that?
Another one of them, I think, was favoritism. Because mm-hmm. I would ask.
Who usually got that work?
Tony. Mm-hmm. Tony, that most of the time. And then she wouldn't come in or she'd lay out and stuff. And I was saying, well, why can't I come? I would be here. Mm-hmm. But you know, I never did get no answer.
Do you think white folks and black folks were treated differently? Was there any kind of favoritism regarding race?
Well, as for the job, no. But see, when it comes down to us two women, you know, one black, one white, mm-hmm. I think that was favoritism. That's the only part I seen, like I said, because I'd be wanting to work on searches, you know, going to work searches. And see, they wouldn't let me work. A certain one, they let her work probably every search, and I didn't get to work. And I was asking to work. But that's the only favoritism, you know, I seen between the black and white. Everybody was treated, you know, about equal. Mm-hmm.
But then any of your colleagues who were black as well sort of complained that they had some of the same problems, that they didn't get to do things. And...
No.
Yeah. Okay. What was the dress code at White Furniture? Was there one?
Not really. What? As long as your shorts weren't too short. Mm-hmm. You know, you could wear shorts as long as they weren't too short. That's the only one I can remember. Only thing I can remember.
What about policies about smoking and tobacco and that sort of thing?
I know everybody, they chew tobacco on the line, which you couldn't smoke it then. because she ran so much driveway, they couldn't smoke in there. You know, yeah, you either had to go outside on the dock or break room or whatever, but you couldn't smoke in there. It was the only thing.
But you could chew tobacco in there?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I seen a lot of them chewing the back. Yep.
And how about like telephone policies and things like that? What if you got a phone call at work? How would they deal with that?
Okay, I had got a phone call. I had some friends, you know, long distance truck driver. And this girl just wanted to speak to me. Because, you know, they were just passing through. And when they come through town, and like I said, I was getting ready to get off. What, about 30 minutes before I got off? And I found out that they said, well, can't you wait 30 more minutes? She'll be out from work. And they wouldn't let them see me. Not even speak to them. They wouldn't let me talk to them on the phone. You like to get a phone message, you'd get it that evening or whatever, next day.
They wouldn't bring it to you though while you were there so you could call it your next break?
Nope. You go to punch out and be step pinned onto your time card. But I'd have, you know, two or three incidents like that. Like I said, a friend come through and they would let her talk to me. She had called or something. Now, she might have come by there. So, you know, I didn't get to see them.
How about talking with people in other departments? Were the departments really separated? Were you ever allowed to wander into another department if you had a friend? If you were on break, could you wander up to finishing, for instance, if they had a different break schedule and say hey to someone up there?
Yeah, if you was back in your department on time. You know, they wanted you back in your department on time, you know. But if you had time to go up there and speak to somebody, you could, you know, like upstairs, but just as long as you got back in your department when that buzzer blew. And you see from where we had to take a break at it. Would it take us 2 to 3 minutes to walk to the break area? We had a 10-minute break. 2 to 3 minutes to walk up there to get you something to eat, waiting in line, and to walk back. You know, they wanted you back by then, you know, the last buzzer blew. Mm-hmm.
Did you have any place or space in your work area where you could keep special things? Anything you brought to work, little things that, you know, sort of your own little locker or space like that where you could keep things?
We had a place, you know. Okay, where I worked at is a little section up on the saw. They got me, I had a $13 ruler, tape measure. And we had been off work for 2 or 3 days and somebody actually stole it. But see, you couldn't bring nothing of value to work because somebody get it, nobody seen it, and there wasn't nothing they could do about it.
There was no place to lock things up?
Nope.
Where would you hang your jacket, your Redskins jacket?
Where, anywhere right there around me, because, you know, I could hang it right here on this corner of this thing. Just somewhere right there. And then if you bought something you didn't want to get dusty, maybe it was a nail in office, you know, in Robert's office, you could hang it in there. You know, you find somewhere over against the wall or something. You don't think it'd get dusty.
But you didn't have, like, when you were working the ripsaw, it seems to me like I often saw you at the same machine day after day.
Right.
Is that right?
Yeah. Uh-huh. I had a certain saw that I worked on, you know, me and my partner, because you got two people on the saw, so we first saw, and then Terry and them worked on the second saw, they had about four saw, then about to work on the third saw, and then the fourth saw. The same people work on the same saw. Now, unless they had something for somebody to do, that they would place you, you know, you go up there and work with him. Yeah.
So could you leave things around that saw like it was your own, and no one would mess with it? Like
yeah.
Hang your jacket on it?
Uh-huh. And nobody mess with it.
Did you have a favorite rip saw?
Yeah, the one I was on. Yeah, that was my favorite. Yep, that was my favorite saw.
Now, Annette, you talked a little bit about how rough it was when you started working on the rip saw with your partner. Who was your partner in the end when I came in?
Kirkworth.
Tell me about Kirk.
Kirk was okay. He was a young boy. Mm-hmm. You know, young, you know, he called him a young boy. But he was young, you know. And me and him could work together because he had been trying to get on the rip saw. And then when my other partner got fired, you know, they let him have a chance at the saw. Mm-hmm. And me and him, we worked together good. We had understanding. Sometimes we talk junk to each other. Mm-hmm. Sometimes we grab each other. Well, he'd do something to me and I'd grab him. He thought one of the men had grabbed him. Because mm-hmm. you could handle yourself, can't you? Mm-hmm. No, we you know, had a certain thing. He was okay.
Were you two especially close because you
worked together? Yeah, I think it's called work together. Yeah. And he look out for me or tell me something, whatever. Yeah.
Would you, Was he the person, or was there a person that you would talk to if there was something at home that was bothering you, or something personal you wanted to talk about? Who would you share that with?
Let's see. I don't think I had nobody at work. I think there was nobody that I would talk to. No, there wasn't nobody I'd talk to. You know, something bothered me at home, whatever.
Would you keep that to yourself then?
Yeah. So I had a girlfriend, you know, I had this girl away from home, you know, I'd go and talk to her if something was bothering me.
How about during your breaks? Who would you spend your breaks with, your lunch break and your morning break?
With people back there in the Rough Mill. Like the guy I work with and Terry and, you know, I go, if I get a biscuit or sandwich, you know, we sit at the break table together. I sit with them. Because there really wasn't no women for me to sit with. So really, I sit with the guys. Just like I said, I'm right down running Rip Saws and whatever, and Leon, Nim, or Manuel, Jose, people like that.
Did black folks tend to sit together and white folks sit separately? Was there much of that, or was it?
No, all of it was together. Everybody sit together. We would see a bunch of see. Terry didn't smoke, Kirk didn't smoke, and I didn't smoke. You know, James Clark, he smoked, so, you know, he sit up here at the other end, you know, people work in the machine room. Most all the smokers sit together. And then Leon and Emmanuel and smoke.